techniques make that where the attachment points are for the antenna, and roll the ladder line down a piece of PVC vertically on the outside, so that way you provide protection for it. The PVC will interact with the ladder line, because it's not quite in free space at that point, but you'll be able to tune it out fairly easily. But I was thinking that way you have the ability, if you do it right, to create an antenna where you could unscrew the elements and put the thing back together pretty quickly. And you can just move up a small PVC mat to hold the ladder line in place and, you know, go from there. You might even make stout that out to something bigger as well and to hold it up in the air. But anyway, that was my mind was racing too.
But I'd build it out of wire and make it a rectangle like a loop antenna and hang it up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And besides, for a lot of good reasons, you want to build out a wire first to make sure you understand what you're messing with before you start screwing with, well, do it free air and with wire, because it's cheaper, faster, and that's what the original design is. Get that to work right. Make sure you can replicate that before you start messing with materials. But if you need to do something rigid, because say you didn't have anything to hang something on, this would be another strategy for getting that done, and would allow you to build that reflector behind it just hunky-dory wonderfully. So all sorts of good stuff out there for that. Anyway, anybody else on this topic? Any closing comments, Jim?
No, that's it for me.
Okay, we had another comment, and I forgot to write it down. Who was the other comment from? There were comments from three Jims. So is the other one NS2K, or did he make his comment already?
Oh, no, I've already done my thing here. Yeah, I'm sending you another note here, request for the antenna dope, and something that I ran into at Home Depot the other day. Some driveway markers. They had short ones and long ones. The long one was like, I don't know, $2.80 or something. It's about 6 feet long, about a quarter inch in diameter, rather fairly stiff piece of fiberglass rod with some... what I would like to think is fairly weatherproof, UV-proof gel coat. So I thought that was kind of an interesting little find.
Yeah, I know about the four-footers, but they have six-footers now?
Yeah, usually all you see is the short ones, but they had some longer ones. They're pretty close to 6 feet.
Which Home Depot was this?
The one on Hackensack Avenue, just north of Route 4.
Wow, that's the one that never has anything. Good. Wow, that's excellent. That's truly excellent. All right, very good. Yeah, that is amazing. I've looked at that more than once and said, But that would certainly be another way of holding up a... holding up a reflector setup. Very good. Or even a quad, or heaven forbid, a quaggy. Alright. I should probably explain what a quaggy is, since I brought that up, and probably about half the people here don't know what a quaggy is. You each know what a yagi is. It's a dipole antenna with generally a reflector that's about 5% longer, roughly a quarter wave or a little less behind it. Then it'll have it may have directors in front of it, a number of them, anywhere from a closely spaced one, let's say at 0.12 or 0.15 wavelengths spacing in front of it, to as much as 0.2 in front of it. And you have multiple directors, and that's the direction you're pointing the antenna in. So What an quad, of course, is generally a pair of loops, although it could, again, be more. It could be three loops, four loops, five loops, whatever. And let me drop it. And, of course, they are full-wave loops, not half-wave, and there's DC continuity through the driven element all the way down to the coax because the center conductor is wired to one end of the loop and the shield is wired to the other and goes down to your coax and away you go. And that's, again, all good. That's a quad. And the spacing of the inches between the elements is somewhat similar to that which you do for a Yagi. Then you get to this odd duck called a quaggy. A quaggy has two elements like a quad, i.e. full-wave loops, or a full-wave loop in the case of the reflector, 5%, roughly speaking, longer than the driven. And the other elements are Yagi elements. And Wayne Overbeck, at the time, K6YNB, Yankee November Bravo, later November 6, November Bravo, professor in a college in California. I'm trying to remember which college, I'll think of it. I want to say Pepperdine. But anyway, he designed this thing, and he built a bunch of these suckers. He built 16 of them, threw them on the top of his pickup truck camper, and drove to Alaska and put Alaska on 2-meter EME, 2-meter moon bounce, with this sucker, and he could rotate it in azimuth, he could elevate it, and he could spin it on its axis to change polarization. It was really awesome. And he could do that on a portable setup. Okay, so when a kid is in high school and sees this crazed individual going portable in a whole new way, and he is like 14 years old. And it was 1972 when that was published. I want to say it was 72. I have to go back and look. But when a young man sees that, or a young woman sees that, as a young person, you say to yourself, when I get big, I'm going to do that and more. And while I've never been to Alaska to do EME, I have done EME, and I have put ridiculous things on my van, both this one and the previous one. Some of you might remember the 8-foot solid dish that I had on a Run 25 towers, or a couple of Run 25 tower sections on the front of this van years ago. That was interesting. Anyway, just to calibrate everybody, that's when Barra was meeting at the Elks in New Milford. Alrighty, anybody else have comments?
Yeah, Mr. K.
Yeah, Jim.
I even remember when you had a gigantic toolbox mounted sideways on the back of your truck up above the roof.
Actually, it used to be mounted sideways. Now it's mounted crossways.
It's still there?
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story. I work with a fellow who's, you know, just dynamite. He's just a great guy, you know. We provide good complementary skills to each other, to say the least. And he's a very, you know, experienced fellow. He's a distinguished member of technical staff. I mean, yep, yada, yada, yada. His wife is has a similar title, over in ATT Research. And we've met socially at colleagues' weddings and other such social gatherings. And every so often, like if I'm over in her office building, I'll just pop in and just say hello and blah, blah, blah. And the other day I was in her building and didn't have a chance to do that, but was in first and was parked in the lot. And at the end of my day, I came out and dropped my stuff on the passenger seat of my truck. And in the spot next to me, she is parked. I didn't realize it was her car until she came out about maybe 2 minutes behind me. And we greeted each other, blah, 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 blah. And she had never seen this man. And she's heard stories from her husband about some of the interesting and outrageous things they come up with. But she took one look at this. She's a mathematician. She took one look at this and went, but what's it for? And I told her, and she went, why? And I said, because it fits the purpose, and it, you know, is just really cool, and it's not immoral, illegal, or dangerous. Even meets Title 39's requirements. She laughed. Anyway, enough of that then. Any other comments?
Yes.
MSTK.
Speaking of AT&T, you saw where Dennis Ritchie had passed away.
Yeah, actually I did. And I'm just going to say this. Last week we lost one of the more talented industrial designers and marketeers. This week we lost a true engineer, analytical analyst, and just unbelievably great research scientist, who, by the way, if he hadn't done what he did, Apple wouldn't have what it has today.
Oh, it's much worse than that. No, obviously, fundamental, at least from a language standpoint, underpinnings for pretty much all of modern computing.
Absolutely. Dennis Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-I-E, was an unbelievable influence on literally millions of computer types of all capabilities and stripes. He made it possible to do things in communications, inter-process communications, operating system, queuing theory, programming languages. You like C? if you like the C language or anything vaguely resembling it, you should thank Dennis Ritchie and miscellaneous other folks. But let's see. Of that Rat Pack, I'm just trying to think. There was Kernighan, Ritchie, David Korn, and, oh God, who was the other guy? Who's the guy who's working on the new Google language? He's kind of impossible. He's kind of an odd duck. I'm trying to remember his name.
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember.
Pike. If you Google the word Google and Pike, or what's that new Google language? G something?
Well, this is a new environment. What, Google Plus or whatever it is? I'm not sure what the language is.
Yeah. Well, when Pike was, there's actually an online, I think, a YouTube video that's pretty funny, actually. Pike is a quirky dude, but he's a former Rat Pack of that whole era. And by the way, there are really two sets of folks that you want to think about. The Kernighan, Ritchie, Korn, Pike kind of crowd. And there are a few others, I'm just drawing a blank. And then on the other side, there are all the Xerox PARC folks. Who is Xerox PARC? Well, Xerox, you know. And PARC stands for Palo Alto Research Center, PARC, P-A-R-C. And Xerox had a research facility in California, in Palo Alto, and they came up with a lot of the extensions to for should we say, graphical user interfaces. However, they started, their base start was with stuff that the first group that I just mentioned started with, but both were talented, talented sets of engineers, designers, analysts, theorists, and they gave rise to the guys like Steve Jobs, who in his own right it was more of a industrial designer and marketeer. Great talent in his own right as well, but just a different level of expertise. But anyway, if you go on the Google site and find out if you Google Pike and Google, you'll get this. There's some video out there where he describes where he's queued. They're getting Q&A about his new Google language, I forget what it's called. And let me drop it. Okay, so the new he's interviewed about the Google language, I think, a Q&A, and someone says, "So, is it object oriented in any way?" And he looks at the questioner in the crowd, glares at him, and says, "Absolutely not," which I think is interesting because when I looked at the first programming example. This will put a smile on anybody who's ever either done C programming, C# programming, or C++ programming, or even shell programming, you know, Unix shell, either K-shell, Bourne shell, C-shell, whatever, any of those, you know, interfaces. The example, as it is for this new Google language, is print hello world, in quotes. In other words, basically it's a little program that will print the phrase hello world. That is the catchphrase, that's the first programming example everybody learns in any of these languages. It's amazing.
About the Go programming language, does that ring a bell?
That's it. Yeah, I did a mental block on it. Yeah, the Go language, and the designer, the lead designer of the language is Pike.
Yeah, Rob Pike, who is now a distinguished engineer at Google.
Yeah, well, you got to watch video of him because unlike some of the other guys who, you know, God knows they had a relaxed attitude, but they were just geniuses. This guy has a relaxed attitude, but he's got a certain intensity about him. But man, he makes the other guy look buttoned up and pinstripe compared to some of the, they look a bit buttoned up and pinstripe compared to Pike. Pike is, he's out there.
Well, anyone who would design a language like Plan 9, okay.
You got a problem with that?
No.
Yeah, Plan 9 was interesting. But there are all sorts of interesting languages out there. Anyway, we've kind of gotten far afield, but that's good. I'm glad. I'll just point out something that some of the constructs for Arduino processing are some of these other, easy-to-program microcontrollers, stamp program controllers and things like that. The language looks amazingly like C, usually with some sort of class inheritance. So you can program a microcontroller do microcode or assembler. So. And having some class structures thrown in there allows you to assign characteristics to, you know, from one variable to the other, or sets of variables from one set to the other, and that makes things a little cleaner and quicker when you're doing things. So, let's say you needed time as a construct, that's a class, and you might have, you know, local time, universal time date, or pardon me, universal date time, I should say. I mean, you could have all these different, you know, specific examples of the parent class, and that way you don't have to define everything from scratch. And so you can build libraries out of things like this, and that speeds things up.
Wow, and you said all that without timing out the repeater.
Work hard at not timing out the repeater.
I'm not sure how many people know what a class is, however.
Consider a data type or a collection of data types put into a set as a structure. So, like, you have your first name, your middle name, your last name, your address, the town you live in, state. You know, that might be a personal. That might be a recipient class, or a, should we say a contact class. And then you could make it a mail recipient contact. You could make it a badge, you know, a badge data contact, or, you know, badge data set that inherits the characteristics from contact class, things like that. So you build structures of data, and then you can repurpose them and name them for different things. So you have different variable names for different things, but they all have the same characteristics as the other thing, as the parent, but just for a different purpose. Another way of thinking about it is a soda container has a body, a cap, and a label. Okay? And so that is the container requirements, but you'll have the Coca-Cola classic, you know, type of the generic soda can. You'll have the seltzer soda can. You'll have the lime diet, you know, mango tutti frutti soda can, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So think of it that way. I mean, you know, you started with the attributes of a soda can, that is a can, a lid, and a label. So all those other things that inherit those characteristics from the generic soda can, or the generic beverage can, whatever you're going to call it, you know, then you have different types that are specific to your needs. But you don't have to sit there and redo all those data types.
Is there anybody else left?
I was kind of wondering, anybody? We've kind of drummed people into the ground here. All right, the reason for this, bringing this up, was we started with Dennis Ritchie, God rest his soul. But, you know, it's useful if you were making a logbook entry and you were trying to design a logbook for yourself. You want to program your own. You'd have call sign. You'd have the from and the to call sign. You might have the QSL manager call sign. Well, they all have a data type call sign. So you just have whatever your design call signs are going to look like, and then you have the different types of call signs, you know, but they all have the same characteristics. Same thing with dates and times, same thing with maybe QTHs, contact stuff, signal report, sent and received. So you have a generic signal report format for a particular type. In fact, you might even have a complex one, so you could have a data type signal report. You can make it sent or received. You could also break it down to phone, CW, PSK31, EME, whatever, and have different types within that. Examples, but they all use the generic class signal report. So anyway, you go on and on and on. Anyway, anybody else have a question or comment for the net?
TJC monitoring.
Oh, speaking of someone who cannot be data typed. TJC, we were just talking about the passing of Dennis Ritchie.
W2JC. The name sounds familiar, but I'm not sure I know who it was. FYI, I'm in Scotch Plains.
Yeah. Yeah, you're also good fencing, but you're good. You'll be fine, except for when you go underneath, that one overpass at like 143, I guess it is, or 142, in Irvington. Irvington Avenue, is it? I guess, something like that. Anyway, yeah, he is among the founders of Unix, C, Shell, all that good stuff.
Okay, now that you placed it. Unfortunately, I'm running on low power, too. And in the dark, I can't see the pin on the microphone to hit the high power, so I'm surprised it's working, but thanks for letting me in, Eric. Yeah, okay. A little echo here, and that's intentional because I'm trying to find out why my HD is not hearing your repeater very well.
All right, well, anyway. Hey, Jim, you and I, meaning Mr. NS2K, you and I managed to drain the swamp, as they say.
I don't think the swamp will have a chance after this.
Yeah, I hear you. And I'm able to get into the repeater, but I'm not able to hear it. That's very troubling.
Oh, no problem over here, even on the HD.
That is interesting. I have a plus and a minus signal on my display. I wonder what that means. Well, anyway, so, yes, regrettably, I think it's Dr. Richie, actually, has passed, but fascinating individual. I got to say this, when I joined Bell Labs in 87 as a contractor, if I got to go up to Murray Hill for one thing or another, I'd meet these guys, or if they were down for a symposium or some meeting in Holmdel, it was like talking to a god, except they were regular guys.
Yeah, Wired has an article here, Dennis Ritchie, the shoulders Steve Jobs stood on. Well, okay, one of the shoulders. Very, very true, NS2K.
I think one thing to keep in mind is, it's real easy for the snotty among us to sit there and, say that one is superior to the other. I'm not quite prepared to do that. As much as I would like to, because there are aspects of Steve Jobs that I just find annoying. But having said that, I believe he is one of the most talented, industrial designers and marketeers of the last 100 years.
Yeah. He certainly understood what the market wanted or wants and was able to bring all the talent together to make it all happen. I think one of the other names you were trying to remember was Ken Thompson.
Yeah, Thompson was one. And there was also another one. Sustrup, the other one. I was drawing a blank on him. It's another interesting character, to say the least.
Must have been a just amazing place to work back then.
Yeah, and I actually was in meetings fairly often with Sustrup, which was kind of interesting in my early days. And that was driven by the fact that I had something that was very provocative that I wanted to do. Let me make sure I have it here. Yeah. What I wanted to do, among other things, was to challenge my colleagues. And mind you, this is in the 80s, okay, and into the 90s. I wanted to challenge my colleagues to create communications interfaces between systems or even applications. Now think about that, even on the same machine, that would use plain text as the transfer syntax, structured in a way that was inherently readable and essentially gave you a report, albeit a little cryptic, but you know, something that you could read and either use for debugging of an interface, debugging of an application, or even as machine-to-machine input. And I would get bit and chewed and killed by people who said, oh, no, we don't have enough bandwidth for you to waste to send this stuff across the interface this way. And my theory was that over time, bandwidth was going to be cheap. Storage was going to be cheap. And by the time you get it to market and it matured into its nth generation, you will be thanking me for this. And that is basically what happened. So what I wanted to do was use abstract syntax notation 1, which was ASN.1. If you look it up, ASN.1, as a generic structure for data typing, so you could do tag length value, but also there would be reserved words and things like that to imply grammar and structure and things like that. So you could have variable length or fixed length, you know, fields, and this is where you get into this data typing. So if you look at, you know, HTML and you look at JavaScript and a few other things, gee, isn't that what we do now? Did I not come through?
Remind me to give you a landline call. I have an idea that you would be the right person to maybe make happen.
Okay. Well, I mean, I used to get bit by guys over this, and there were people who were very, very impressed with these kinds of ideas. And, but it was like, you know, fighting City Hall, because, you know, a lot of us came out of the limited resource world, and in the late 80s there were still somewhat limited resources available, but, you know, they were growing by leaps and bounds, and, you know, people were very, very reluctant to go from their old bit-stuffing ways. I mean, if you had a value between 1 and 5, then you saved 3 bits for it. And then you tried to pack something else into the rest of that, you know, bit string or byte string, you know, in order to compress not just your storage, but your transfer syntax, the information you exchanged on the wire or between processes. I mean, it was absurd. It was absolutely absurd. Anyway, but it's what people did because that was their heritage. That was all of our heritage, whether we came from large mainframes, we came from mini computers, or we came from the microprocessor world. Every one of us started in that starved state, and we were all on the same plane when it came to doing things like, you know, yeah, you multiply by doing shift register, by doing the shift register dance, things like that, or stuffing bytes, and things like that, stuffing bits. I mean, it was amazing. Hash tables, all sorts of stuff. I mean, these techniques are useful, but, you know, wow. Today, would you really bother spending the time? Not always. In a few rare cases, you would, but not generally. Anyway, anybody else on the net, then I think I'm going to grab a phone. TJC, comment. Mr. Jim, go right ahead.
Gordon, you're reminding me of one of the serious problems I had when I was trying to maintain a simulator system that was written for a Perkin-Elmer mainframe that had 512K of RAM. So everything was packed into the bits like that, and they allowed enough bits to, for instance, count up the number of components they thought they'd have on a board, and they never imagined the component count would get bigger than the bits they allotted. And of course it did. And the problem then was, in order to make the system run, it would have required a complete rewriting of the software, because there was no place to add the extra counters, or...
Yeah, I am. Well, yeah. There are all sorts of things like that. I mean, that basically is the, what I'll call the, you Perkin Elmer. My God, I haven't heard that in years. Anyway, bottom line is that that was the same kind of nonsense that caused Y2K problems. Why the Unix clock starts at 1170, you know, when all accounts are, you know, are null, it's 1170. Second one is all zeros except for the last bit is a one.
We're still using a database at work that was written originally for a floppy-based CPM system. It's been updated, sort of, but it's really the same thing wrapped well, actually, a DOS box, but it'll run over a network, amazingly enough. But it's got the same, extremely terse data structure that he needed to fit it on a floppy disk. Needless to say, it was not Y2K compatible, and until 2010, it was really, really ugly, but at least it rolled over. So when it truncates the digits, it sort of looks good. It looks right again, even though it has no clue what it's talking about.
That's amazing. So who originally provided this wonderful piece of software to you?
Oh, this was internally produced.
Oh, I see. And how was that... how is it documented and accounted for?
Documented? I'm sorry. I'm only sort of kidding here. NS2K. Well, there is a little bit of documentation, but not a whole lot. There are enough people around who can noodle around and make it work that we've been able to keep it running here. Even though the guy left the company, 20 years ago now? Almost 20 years? It still works. It's just amazing. Written for CPM all those many years ago.
Yeah, that's neat. So you have somebody who retired 20 years ago and left you with this interesting piece of software. And your company's actually been able to function without them for all these years, ported the thing to God knows how many times, and it still works. In fact, it kind of works better now, finally.
Well, it worked up until 99, and then it started working again in 11. Huh. Anyway, but in the meantime, you had really strange results, and anyway... the date field, at least, you know, the last two digits come up in a useful way, the way it truncates.
Yeah. Very nice. Very, very nice. All right. Mr. Jim, are you getting toward the north up here?
WTJC, yeah, I'm just coming up on Bloomfield now, so I should have a reasonable signal. Speaking of Bell Labs, Gordon, does the name Claude Kagan mean anything?
Claude Kagan? No. Claude Shannon does, but then again, he precedes my time.
Claude Kagan probably precedes your time, too. Okay, I just wondered. Got a history where he very seriously influenced the path of my life. All right.
Really? What was
his expertise, if I may ask? See, I think he did most of his work in the teletype development section.
Okay, so was he in Homedale or was he in Whippany?
I'm not sure. I would guess Homedale, but he lived down in by Trenton. Had a nice little farm down there and stuff. But I'm not sure which office he worked in. I just know he was pretty high up in Bell Labs at the time.
I see. Claude Shannon, by the way, was the father of modern information theory, so if you look up when you get home Shannon's Law, you'll have a lot of fun.
Well, in brief, my story with Claude Kagan, whom I think, as far as I can tell, has passed away now. I guess he would have, because he was no spring chicken back when I was 17 years old, but at that point, he offered me... I was into teletypes, Model 19s and all that kind of stuff, and he offered me... He said, if I give you a box of all the parts required for a Model 28 ASR, and you put it together and it works, you can keep it. And that was like offering me a gold-plated Cadillac at that time.
Oh my God, you know, any of us would have died and gone to heaven to have that.
Well, the way he influenced my life was when I applied for a job as the teletype communications engineer for ITT WorldCom. And the guy who ran the department interviewed me and said, do you know anything about Model 28s? And I said, well, I built one from parts. I had the job within 30 seconds.
Built one from parts of the idea go. Oh, that's a marvelous story. That's a marvelous story. So, I had a similar thing. I dated a young lady in high school named, well, I won't give her name, but I'll give his name. Her father was Harry Karp, K-A-R-P. And I had met his daughter in 72, the summer of 72. I was a CIT at a YMCA camp, and she was one of the older campers in the girls' campsite. Yay. And we became acquainted, in fact. Kind of maintained contact for a while and then lost touch, and a few years later started dating again. Later in high school, after I got back from Paris. So, when I was spending time in their house, he one day sat me down, and we were at the kitchen table on a Sunday morning, and he and I would have breakfast. We tended to be the first ones up, and so he would have his bananas and sour cream. It's a Jewish thing, and I just kind of developed a taste for it. So in case we'd sit down and have a conversation about this and that, and he, he noticed I was interested in amateur radio and things like that, and he says, well, you know, I have an interesting job you might want to know more about, and it's about data communications, and that's, you know, very hard for people to wrap their brains around, but he tells me it's something that's very important going forward, and I went, oh, okay. So I paid attention, and he hands me a copy of Data Communications Magazine, which he says, listen, you have to be normally in the business to get this magazine, but I'm going to get you a subscription. I said, well, thank you very much, Mr. Carpenter. That's very thoughtful of you. So he did that. And when I got my first copy, I noticed that he was the editor-in-chief. and it was a McGraw-Hill publication. At the time it was a freebie, but later on it became a for-pay, and I had that subscription until about 15, 20 years ago. So, Mr. Karp's been gone for a very long time, but his name was Harry Karp.
Funny how life takes its twists and turns, isn't it? Gordon, I don't know if it's just me or not, but you sound like you're a teeny bit off frequency. Jim sounds perfectly fine, but you're quite scratchy.
I sound off frequency now.
It must be something else then.
Yeah, it's called low voltage.
Okay.
Yeah, I can solve this problem, honest. Knowing that its presence is another matter. Look, I should probably go, but any more from either you or Mr. Jim in order? Let's try that.
No, I don't think I have anything else for tonight, but I will thank you for keeping me company on the parkway. And I'm really impressed at how good this repeater sounds down on, I never remember the name of the highway that goes through Springfield and Scotch Plains and all of that, but the signal's quite good down there. W2TTT from W2JC and the group.
Very, very good. W2JC, it's always a pleasure. And S2K, your game.
Well, I'm about ready to call it a night. Amazingly enough, Rachel is still not home from work. Anyway, we were going to have dinner here. It's sitting in the microwave oven, not getting cold fast and out of the reach of the cat. So, oh well, that didn't quite work out. But you guys have a wonderful evening. We'll talk to you soon. NS2K. Have a good one.
Okay, did you want to call you on the electric telephone real quick?
Oh, if you're up to it, sure.
Yeah, I can do that. And then I really have to get in. I can't run the engine anymore, but I wanted to find out what that subject was, and if it's lengthy when you're beat, we can table the meat of the conversation for another time. But since you're not dining and you're not quite calling it a day, and what the heck, I can give you a jingle. NS2K, W2JC, 7-3. Keep smiling, boys. CQDX this weekend. Hi, hi.
CQ Boy Scouts here.
Actually, the phrase is CQ Jodo, but that sounds like a jamboree on the air, but you knew that. All right, W2 TTT clear. 7-3, Jim.
NS2K.
Speaker mics. It's a really nice speaker mic.
it's a Kenwood signal, and I'm using it on Wushan Chinese radio on a handy talkie.
You're not home then?
Actually, I am. I'm just going to bed, but I was just playing with the radio to fix something. Something was bothering me, and I wanted to make sure it was okay. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah, you were having some problems with Dick earlier. I remember hearing that. But you're okay. You're a little noisy, but you know, perfectly copyable.
Oh, yeah, I understand. Just a rubber duck inside the house. Yeah, no big deal. So we do have some great answers.
You ask me a question and you disappear just as you said it.
Were you square dancing tonight or calling?
No, I wasn't. I was visiting a friend. And, I haven't, there's a couple of, there's a whole lot going on right now in the square dance community, so I haven't been to many of them. I kind of slowed down in my calling too. I'm not doing much at all. In fact, I canceled a whole bunch of dates that I had. I'm going out to California to see my son, who's getting married on the 10th of December, and I'm going out there for that. So I had to cancel a few dates that I did have. So I'll try being an ordinary person for a while.
Okay, very good. I spoke with your buddy Jerry earlier this week regarding the passing of a mutual friend of ours, actually his wife, but it's been kind of tough that way. But anyway, are you near home?
Yeah, 5 minutes away.
I think you just popped your frequency. I think you're on frequency.
Wow. The display says 955. I have no way of verifying that.
That transmission was fine. You just had some, what sounded like 5KC off type issues, but you're back.
It hasn't, the radio hasn't done that. So I suspect that what wasn't happening, but never know. Everybody used to complain about this radio because the audio was low. Well, is that that seem reasonable now, or is it still low?
That's fine. I mean, it's not. It's kind of hard to tell when you're the only guy there because I don't have anybody else to compare it to. I mean, I'm able to turn the radio volume all the way up and hear you. So my guess is, since you're not off my butt, my guess is that it's probably low, but it's copyable at this point. I think it would be an issue maybe if you're toggling between users, yanking that microphone, that volume control back and forth.
Yeah. Well, I could talk a little louder too, you know, stand up closer to the microphone.
Oh yeah, do that. That's very good.
Well. So how is Jerry? I haven't seen her for quite a while.
I'm sorry, how's who?
Jerry, you said you just saw her recently?
Yes. I spoke with her several times recently. We ran a couple of scouting events, and then when a scouting friend of Steve Leonardi hit for me, I'm letting go of the microphone. He's a fellow who lives up near, between you and Don, basically. He lost his wife this past weekend to pancreatic cancer. She came up quickly late last spring and took her by this time.
I didn't get who it was who died.
A lady named Judy Leonardi. You can see her obit in today's paper. But her husband, Steve, is a professional scouter, a really good guy, and a ham.
Yeah, well, I don't know them, so as you suspected. I was I've been teaching a square dance class in the Paramus school system for the last 20 some odd, almost 30 years. And that I'm going to give up at least for a while. I've been doing it long enough.
Well, yeah, Andy, it's fine. I think we're all a little reluctant to give up what we've been making good habits of doing, but sometimes, A, our interests change, or our ability to do it changes, or even our interest to do it changes, so time to go do something else. Better give up while you're happy about it before it becomes a pain in the ass. You're now in one of those muffly, kind of like you sound like you're on frequency mode. But yes, when I'm using the speaker mic, if I'm not careful, I do release. I apologize.
No problem. I just thought you'd be interested. I am pulling into my garage. So I will wish you a good evening. Thank you for keeping me company. And we'll I have to put a week or spring on that push to talk button. W2TTP K2EP and good night, good.
Good night, Andy. Take care and Godspeed. K2EP and W2TTP. Night night.
W2TTC, copy KA2NYO Mobile. KA2NYO Mobile, listening. On that one, try it again.
That's KC2J in the testing.
Is that you, Gordon?
Negative. KC2J in the
testing. You did it at KC2, can't make out the topic.
Stationary right now.
Yeah, I'm on the way home from the job. Hopefully the agent in Europe, Shadow Old, and Fort Winchester.